As the U.S. men's national team takes center stage at a home World Cup, make sure you're listening to Call It What You Want, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network, where you can join me, I'm Jimmy Conrad, alongside Charlie Davies, Tony Miola, Marcelo Balboa, and Benny Feilhaber throughout this tournament for previews, instant reactions, and analysis of every U.S. match. Then all summer, we're back every Tuesday and Thursday, covering all things U.S. men's national team. Download and follow Call It What You Want on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, Dino, we've told everyone about him. We've told him his story. We have detailed his struggles and his heroism there on Patriots Day. We told you all about Jeff. Now we get to talk to the man himself. Joining us on the phone is Jeff Bowman. How you doing, Jeff?
Good, good. How are you?
Excellent, excellent. I saw you the other day, and I told everybody that you looked great. You sounded great. Can you just, first off, tell us, how is the recovery going, Jeff?
It's going fast. But, I mean, it hurts every day.
And you are already into the rehab phase, which I couldn't believe. What's that like?
Yeah, I just started my physical training and my occupational training yesterday, and it tired me out.
You got a lot of famous visitors when you were in the hospital. Who all beside Callahan? I don't consider him that famous. Beside Callahan, who came in to see you, Jeff?
I had some Patriots players and Julian Edelman, mm-hmm. Rob Gronkowski, Stephen Ridley, and then Bradley Cooper came.
Wow.
That was pretty cool.
I like that one. His uncle didn't even know who it was,
yeah.
Of course. He's like, who the hell's Bradley Cooper? I'm saying, in The Hangover. Oh, yeah, that guy. That was just like out of the blue, wasn't it, Jeff?
Yeah, he came. It was this Julian Edelman. He came up, and then, yeah, I guess. They were like, I guess Bradley Cooper's on his way up, which I thought they were joking, but he was there.
What about Gronk? How was Gronk?
He was nice. Nice guy.
Cool. You got autographs from everybody?
Yep.
Good.
And Thornton was awesome. I mean, Thornton.
Yeah, Sean Thornton was the day that I was leaving.
Yeah, we can't forget Thornton. He said he was going to come see you again. He couldn't have been nicer. Jeff, I was obviously there for a while talking to your buddy Sully, and Sully told me the story, and it's just incredible. Of you, I believe you were there for one day. You couldn't talk. You had tubes coming out everywhere. You were in real pain, and you asked Sully for whatever, a pencil and paper, and started writing, and Sully was saying his hands just started shaking. I mean, I know you're not comfortable with this. I know you're a humble, quiet guy, but I mean, that was the first big break on the case. Why don't you tell us about it?
Yeah, well, I was still conscious when I was being transported from the blast site to the hospital. Mm-hmm. And the whole time when I was in the hospital, I was given descriptions of the guy. The first guy, the guy with the hat and the glass, the right. Aviators and the 5 o'clock shadow.
Right, Tamerlan, suspect number one, right.
Yeah, suspect number one. I was just real adamant about it. And then when I did come through out of the operation, I guess, the FBI was all around my room and troopers.
Sully had to like run out and get somebody, right? He had to say, "Hey, get in here. We got something to say." And you couldn't even talk at that point, right?
No, I couldn't.
When did you find out they got him? Or when did you find out that was him that you helped crack the case?
Last Wednesday?
Yeah.
Wednesday or Thursday?
Hey, Jeff, oftentimes when somebody's injured, they don't remember what happened. I mean, we hear car victims say, I don't even remember getting in the car that morning when I had my car accident. But that's not the case with you. You remember pretty much everything. What do you remember in the moments leading up to the explosion in terms of making eye contact with this guy and what you were thinking at the time? What do you remember specifically about the moments just before, during, and after?
Well, I was with my girlfriend's roommates, and we were having a great time, you know. We were watching the runners. Everyone was having a great time. And just that one guy, you know, he didn't look like he was having a good time. So he was right next to me, you know, at that point. And he had a bag and he had his glasses. He had a kind of leather, like, sweatshirt type of deal.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it was warm out. He was just an odd guy. He just struck me odd. And that's what I remember of him. And then next thing you know, I hear fireworks and I'm on the ground, you know.
And next thing you know, you're being transported with some crazy cowboy hanging on to you.
I saw him. He was running around helping everybody, and then when it came to help me, he helped me. He was crazy. He was going nuts helping everybody. His adrenaline was definitely kicking.
Are you thinking at that point you're going to make it?
Not really. Actually, when Carlos picked me up and threw me into the wheelchair, then I was like, all right, maybe I am going to make it. But before that, no way. I thought I was done.
Carlos told us that two things he wanted to accomplish with you, Jeff, was to stop the bleeding as best he possibly could, which he did a pretty good job. And the other thing is, he didn't want you necessarily to see exactly, you know, what had happened to you. At what point did you see what had happened to you? Were you aware of what had happened?
Yeah.
How does your brain process that?
How did my brain process?
Yeah, how does your brain process that when you see that?
You didn't look like you were panicked. And Carlos said you talked to him. He said you were unbelievably composed.
I kind of just, I don't know. I just toughed it up at that point, you know?
Yeah, I was explaining to people, I said, even before this, you were kind of laid back and humble, and you weren't like some people in your family, your uncle in particular, you weren't like out of your mind. You were kind of level-headed guy, but you looked that way even in the worst of circumstances. And Carlos said he wasn't sure if, you know, you'd have made it if you weren't such a good patient.
Yeah, I mean, I was definitely hurting, but I was sad.
Right.
I was... that someone would actually do that, you know?
So you actually looked this person in the eyes. I mean, he had sunglasses on, but you made eye contact with this guy.
Yep.
And immediately you knew there was something wrong.
Yeah, exactly. Like, he just didn't seem right, you know? So, you know, like, you size somebody up, and I just looked at him. I was like, what's this guy's problem,
you
know?
And how long before the explosion was that, Jeff?
It could have been 5 minutes. It could have been 2 minutes. It was quick, you know.
And I know your
he was there, and then he was gone, and then boom.
Jeff, how long after the explosion? How long a process? How quick was it before that? Before Carlos got to you and you were at the hospital? Do you have any memory of how fast the process that was? Or
no, it seemed like 10 minutes.
Right.
You know, that's what it probably was more like 15 minutes, and it was quick. Very quick. Everybody was just excellent. And the EMTs, the hospital staff was excellent. It was just...
And they like you, too. When they moved Jeff out, he got a standing ovation from, like, all the nurses, because he was such a good patient. After you told Sully what you saw... Right there and then, are FBI agents running in the room and cops and investigators? Is that what happened?
Yeah, they were there from the moment I was talking right when I got to the hospital,
mm-hmm.
right when I showed up in the ambulance.
Really?
And was a sketch artist ever brought in so they actually drew a picture of him, or they just took your description, the words of your description?
Yeah, they brought it. For the first suspect, I think they just took the description,
mm-hmm.
but then they were then I think they thought I saw the second suspect, and on like Wednesday they had a sketch artist in,
and so he drew a picture, and did it look like the guy that we now know is suspect number one?
Yeah, it looked just like him.
You're amazing, Jeff.
You know,
it's
Jeff,
unbelievable.
The picture, and everybody's seen pictures of you, the famous one with you and Carlos. But even more than that, Jeff, is you bringing in the birthday gift for Sydney Corcoran on her 18th birthday. You want to talk about a tearjerker. That thing made it around the world. Tell us how that all went. I know she was a couple doors down, but what made you go and visit her on her birthday?
Well, my girlfriend, Erin Hurley, she's been great this whole time. She was telling me about them. And how their story, and she got a card for them, and I had a bunch of stuff from Costco. That's where I worked, and they've been great also. They brought me a bunch of electronic stuff, so I was like, let's give her some gifts and bring some stuff down to her. And that's what happened. We just brought this stuff down to her.
How did your girlfriend find out that you were not waiting for her at the finish line and taken to the hospital? How did that line of communication open up, Jeff?
It took a long time for her to find out, because she was still like a mile out. Luckily, she cramped up, and she was a mile out, and when she was at the finish line, they weren't letting people finish.
How long were you? I'm sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, she was very confused. She didn't know.
How long were you standing in that spot? Because we hear so many stories of people who were headed that direction or for whatever reason didn't go there or were there and left. Were you somewhere else and just arrived there, or had you staked that spot out for a long period of time?
No. First, we saw Aaron, actually, right where I think where – what's the curve where Commonwealth is, like,
yes.
135?
Yep.
It's 16.
Mm-hmm.
There's like a firehouse there.
Right.
Yeah, we went there and we saw her. That was really fun. There was a lot of people there. And we picked her out of the crowd, and she came running over and she gave us a hug and stuff. And we had a sign. And we met her there, and then we went down to the finish line, which we thought was going to be a good idea.
Mm.
And yeah, we just tried to find the best spot to get a picture of her, you know?
And how long were you standing there? Were you there an hour or so, or less than that?
No, less than that. Yeah. We were there probably for like 25 minutes.
Yeah.
Off.
Oh. Yeah.
And I talked to Erin. She has every intention of running next year and finishing next year. What are your plans, Jeff? You're going to be at the finish line?
I don't know yet.
Or somewhere along the route?
Yeah, definitely.
My guess is the BAA will have a place of honor
for
Jeff and other patients as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, I think you already are an inspiration. Everybody on the text line, everyone's calling us and telling us. But I saw you in action and getting out as quick as you did, getting into rehab as quick as you did. I think there are a lot of kids, you know, younger than you, you know, as you know, you've met some of the victims who are going to look at you and say, hell, I can do it too. I mean,
yeah.
you met some, not just Sidney Corcoran, you met some other victims, I assume, in the hospital.
I didn't get to. You know, it's...
You will.
Sadly, as it seems, like, everyone stayed in their room, and the brief times I was out of my room, it was just, like, I can't really spend that much time in the wheelchair.
Right.
I get tired, so I didn't have enough time to meet other victims yet.
How much of the thing did you watch on TV? I saw the TV on the news in your room, and I'm saying... Well, is he keeping up with it? And, you know, everybody's keeping up with it. I don't know how you couldn't, but did you follow things like the rest of us did, you know, every day, follow all the developments?
I mean, I watched a little bit of it. I didn't follow it. You know, it was tough. But, yeah, I didn't follow it probably as much as most people did.
What about when they got him? What about when you found out that the guy you saw was run over, literally, by his brother?
Yeah. I mean, well, what I thought was, he's dead and I'm still here, you know?
It's a good thought.
If the doctors, Jeff, outline what the next, I don't know, couple of months are going to be like for you in this process?
Yeah, it's just a lot of getting my upper body strength. It's still physical training and occupational training, and I'm going to try to get my hearing back, my hearing shot. I can't hear for anything. Just getting my strength up so I can go home.
Well, I'll tell you, when I knew you were going to be okay, when Sully told me, he walked in the room, I don't know what day it was, Thursday, Wednesday, and he said, you looked up to me and you said, hey, look, Lieutenant Dan. I said,
oh, yeah.
That sounds like Jeff.
Yeah, I was joking around.
I knew that.
Hey, Jeff, what was it like when Carlos Arandola came into the room? Was that an emotional time when you met Carlos?
Yeah, very emotional. Very emotional. I text him every day. We talk every day.
Excellent.
Do you? Excellent. I tell you this, John and Kirk. I tell him about, you know, the Red Sox want you to throw out the first pitch.
Right.
He doesn't even care. And then I say, they want you to do it with Carlos. And, you know, his face lights up. He's like, awesome. I'll do that. I mean, that's the way Jeff looks at it. So you are going to do it with Carlos, correct? That's the plan?
Yeah, I'll do it if Carlos does it.
You're going to get a hat like Carlos's?
Yeah, well, he gave me a fedora.
Did he?
Yeah, a fedora, when he came to visit me, yeah.
You're getting a lot of stuff. He's got hats and shirts.
Yeah. And he gave me he has this double-sided pin of his son's that he lost.
I'll give him credit, man. He just snuck in the back door one day, right, and popped in?
Yep.
Cameras? Yeah.
Jeff, I'm going to try. This is not meant to be an insensitive question, but I'm listening to your voice, and you don't sound angry. You don't sound pissed off. Can I ask you what your feelings are about the men who did this to you and so many other people?
Yeah, I'm pissed,
yeah,
obviously, but, I mean, it's in the past, you know? You can only look forward.
And I mean, that's a great attitude. You're alive and he's dead. There are other people, too, who lost their lives. Do you feel in any way like, you know, you got a lot to live for now?
Yeah. I had a lot to live for before, and I got a lot to live for now.
Well, we appreciate it. I know they have big plans for you today. They're going to wear you out. That's what they warned him. He said, they're going to wear you out at rehab.
Going to work today, yeah. Jeff.
So you got calisthenics at 8 o'clock, and, I mean, they're going to work you hard.
Best of luck, Jeff. God bless you.
I'm looking forward to it. Thank you.
Well, I appreciate you, your time, my friend. Good luck.
Look forward to shaking your hand at Fenway Park, you and Carlos.
All right.
Jeff Bowman from Spalding Rehab, going to work.
I'm telling you, he's got an unbelievable attitude. That's why he's already out of the hospital.
Yeah.
Which I couldn't believe. And he literally did. They're carting him out and all the people looking going, he's leaving? It was inspirational because there were other people, including the Corcoran family right across the hall. And you're saying, wow, you know, this healing thing is real. He got out of the hospital, you know, in 9 days.
That's unbelievable.
9 bleeping days.
Attitude has a lot to do with
into
it.
Into rehab, and then he's going to, I think he's probably 4 or 6 weeks of rehab, but he's going to, you know, he does have a lot to live for. He is going back to, you know, work. He is going back to his life, and I think a lot of people are going to look at him as a great example. A
great inspiration.
I'm alive and he's dead.
That's perfect.
Right.
Great line.
That is perfect. Get someone to put that on a t-shirt. I'm alive and he's dead. And you know what? It's not just him. There are other people. There are victims who did not come through this.
I would have such a feeling of satisfaction that I did even a little bit to help people find this animal. And Jeff did a lot, not just a little bit.
No, we are underrating what he did.
Yes.
For certain reasons.
How cool is it that he provided the first description of this guy?
And his friend Sully described it to me, you know, because Jeff's obviously got a lot on his mind, a lot going on. So Sully tells me, he writes it on the thing, hat, black hat, sunglasses, you know, black bag. They immediately, he runs out, they run in there, cops, investigators, FBI, bring him in. Then they go back, or they go through all the film, all the pictures, and what are they doing? They're looking for a guy with a black hat and sunglasses.
Yep.
It got a lot easier. He broke the bleeping case. Now, should the FBI have known about this guy before? I think we've covered that ground.
Yeah,
but they didn't. They dropped the ball. And I wonder, if not for Jeff, are they out there still? Was there a big explosion in Times Square, you know, 3 days later?
Well, consider to what extent that narrowed down the search.
Right.
Yeah.
They were looking at all these images.
Yeah.
They were asking for people to send in video and any images they had. They didn't know what they were looking for. They were looking for somebody, I don't know, with a backpack, I suppose, when they realized that was a backpack that was blown to smithereens.
Right, good point.
Outside both of those. But they didn't know what the people looked like.
That's
they had
true.
No idea.
And you got 10,000 people on the Lord. Say the Lord and Taylor video.
Sure.
Say that's what they get. They're looking for one guy, and I don't know if he helped or anybody helped. I don't know if they even thought there was two guys. They didn't think there's two guys at this point. But they're looking for black hat, sunglasses, whatever that jacket was.
Right.
You know, he said it was like leather, but it was a little heavy for that crowd. Not watching the race, not smiling. Wasn't that interesting? He says everyone's having a great time except him.
Except for him.
Which is the image you get with the second bomber with Martin Richards in front of him, and all these kids just having a blast, and this miserable, smug, evil bastard right behind him. So they get that order, boom, right away, where's that warehouse, Seaport District, that warehouse?
Yes, down at Seaport.
Someone's in that warehouse going over every film, including the Lord and Taylor film. Narrow it down to the guys with black hats and sunglasses.
Correct.
Well, it's
within 10 minutes.
It's incredible he's able to remember it, first of all.
Yes.
And then secondly, to put that together and say, gee, that guy was suspicious, and do that.
Yes. And I found it also interesting because the first picture I saw with Carlos and Jeff, did it not appear that he was in shock and unaware of what was going on? He said no. He said he was totally aware and conscious the whole time.
He said he got his legs blown off, and he said he toughed it up.
Yeah, toughed it up. Yeah.
And Carlos is holding his femoral artery and talking to him, and he's like conversing with him. I was thinking the same thing. Everyone's thinking the same thing. Are you aware of what's happening to you?
Yes.
And he was.
And he was.
And he was bummed out. You know, he was upset. He was angry. He was in pain. But he was thinking, I saw something. And it's amazing. This is one day later. You're thinking you go through that kind of traumatic injury, you wouldn't be able to think straight for a month.
Right.
One day later.
Plus, I'm pretty sure he was on some pain medication.
Yeah, he was totally drugged up, and he's saying, and they're not even asking him, he's asking them, give me a piece of paper.
He was proactive, right?
His attitude is, it's unbelievable. You can't imagine somebody that
What happens if he doesn't, if he doesn't see the guy? If he doesn't, I mean, do we not?
Might still be looking. Times Square might have been hit.
I think it's not a stretch to say those other explosives, they don't go off in an empty street in Watertown.
Right.
Right? They go off on that
somewhere.
They have one other pressure cooker bomb, and they know how to use those.
Yep.
That's going off somewhere and doing some damage, if not for Jeff. Those pipe bombs or whatever they call those crude homemade bombs, two of them went off on an empty street in Watertown. Those aren't going off there. They're going off somewhere crowded. They are doing some damage, if not for Jeff. Having the composure, the poise, the guts to say, I saw something.
We'll take a break. 617-779-7937. Dale Arnold joins us in the 8 o'clock hour. Greg Bedard in the 9. We'll see you then.
Hey there, I'm Kendra Adachi, and my show, The Lazy Genius Podcast, helps you be a genius about the things that matter and lazy about the things that don't, and you get to decide what matters. I'm not here to tell you what to do. I'm here to give you a new way to see. Episodes of the Lazy Genius Podcast are full of compassionate time management tips and permission slips to do what makes sense for you. New episodes drop every Monday. Follow and listen to the Lazy Genius Podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.